Do you know how much we pay for cell phones? And part of that service that we're paying for is security. So I don't give a shit. Lots of stuff going on, Hector, but at Hacker in the Fed, we got to start off with this biggest one. It's called the worst U.S. hack in history.
Oof.
Hector Monsiger was responsible for some of the most notorious hacks ever committed.
FBI Special Agent Chris Tarbell.
Hackers and FBI informants
participated in some of the world's most infamous hacks
that caused up to $50 million in damages.
A life in the shadows.
Cyber attacks on the rise.
Welcome to Hacker in the Fed. I'm Chris Tarbell, former FBI special agent, working my entire career in cybersecurity. I'm joined, as always, by my friend and podcast co-host, Hector Monsiger. Hector's a former Black Hat hacker who once faced 125 years in prison for his many years of hacking under the codename Sabu. Our stories collided in June of 2011 when I arrested Hector and then convinced him to work with me at the FBI. Hector is now a red teamer, researcher, and cybersecurity expert. Hector, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, my friend. How about yourself?
I am fantastic. Our show is blowing up. It's growing. I saw that recently it is in the top 1% of all podcasts. We are back on it.
Let's go. I love it. We got to celebrate. Hold on. Let me pop a beer real quick. All right. Let's go. Cheers.
I love all the Hacker in the Fed listeners are out there. The show's blowing up, Hector. I'm pretty excited about what's going on. We're getting a lot of response on email. People are reaching out saying we're glad we're back. And hopefully all this news in cybersecurity these days, we'll see if we can keep going with it and what we can make out of this thing.
I'm not sure we could catch up. There's so much going on at the same time, but let's try.
Yeah, tons of stuff in the news going on. But I want to talk to you about something that I recently heard.
Ah, what is that?
I heard you wrote a diss track.
Yeah, that's right. That's very true.
Have you recorded it anywhere?
Well, you know, I do have like a preliminary recording on my phone because I was curious as to how it would sound. And, you know, it's crazy. In my head, it sounds amazing. If I'll go to like a battle rap show, like on stage, in my head, wonderful.
So this is a diss track that goes out to CISOs and cybersecurity. It's about cybersecurity, right?
It's about cybersecurity leadership that are out there and they're kind of not doing the right thing. And so because of that, I said, hey, let me put together this track and entertain myself while I'm here by myself at 3 a.m.
Well, let me ask you, you get hired by a lot of CISOs out there to come and red team their stuff. Any concern that you are dissing some of your customers?
Not at all, because a lot of my CISO guys are doing the right thing. If they weren't, we wouldn't be talking, right?
The balls on you. Like, go after your customers. Go directly after them.
Oh, no, I'm not going after my customers. I'm going after the CISOs that are not my customers.
Because they're doing it wrong. I got you.
That's exactly right.
Well, don't go after any Hacker in the Fed listeners with any diss tracks. I don't want to see that. So,
no.
Hector, what's it going to take for me to hear the diss track and the Hacker in the Fed listeners to hear this diss track? What's it going to take?
Oh, my God. That's insane. I mean, it's got to be like, I don't know, 1,000 subscribers or likes or something. There'll be something that, you know, it's going to be very obvious to me when I log in, you know, over the next week or so. So,
all right. So if we can get 1,000 new subscribers or how about 100 listener questions? If you get 100 listener questions or what do you want? Let's get the subscribers. You get 1,000 new subscribers.
Yes. The subscribers would be dope, but you know what would be fascinating? I love the questions. So,
all right.
Questions, the merrier. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to have more questions. It gives me something to do, you know, during my off time. And I'm sure for those of you that have emailed me have emailed us so far, you may have noticed my responses come in at, like, if you're following me on the Eastern time, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So it's like perfect timing.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have to respond directly to the listeners when they send us a question. Maybe the only one when they email us, we'll email them back with the diss track. So,
but I'm with it.
Are you going to lay it down to music or is it more like, how do you do it? How do you, I've never rapped before. I'm probably the most white bread guy, you know.
Well, I do a lot of poetical prose. I'm a prose guy. So it'll be in the form of like a poem. And I'll gladly record it for the podcast here. And it'll be fun. We won't need a beat for that, you know? And by the way, for those of you that love like prose and stuff like that, there's a place that I used to love going to. I need to go there soon. In fact, Chris, next time you come to New York, let's go take it a visit. Let's give it a visit. But there's a place in the Lower East Side. I used to go there back in the days, called the New Orican Poets Cafe. So 4th Street between like C and B. Dope spot. When I went there the last time, they had some lady. They had a couple of ladies doing poetry and singing in the language of Taino. And it sounded beautiful. Native language. So, that's kind of the style that I'll be pushing.
I don't even know where that language is spoken. Where is that spoken?
Well, it's a dying language. So the Taino language is that of the Caribbean or the West Indies. So it was spoken at one point across Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic or Hispaniola in other places. But folks have been keeping the language alive, so you might hear a little poem here and there written in it, and it sounds okay. It sounds cool.
Yeah,
sounds I don't like understand it.
No, yeah. But if it's like Italian opera. I don't need. I don't understand Italian, but I certainly understand the beauty of it and their voice and how they can change and all that. So.
Oh yeah, the cadence and all that. Oh,
yeah.
I'm with it.
I can appreciate it. I do know like the dirty Italian words because my wife's family is Italian, so she curses at me in Italian.
I love that.
But then I really pervert it when I said it back to her, and not pervert it like gross pervert, yeah. But like I really mess up the language.
Really?
Oh, yeah, that's not good. I'm no good. I'm horrible with languages. Horrible with languages.
You serious?
Yeah, I cannot. I'm not good with them at all.
Wow.
So.
Well, let me ask you then. So. Since we're on that topic, right? So when you were in the FBI, did they ever require you to take a language like Arabic or Chinese or anything like that?
No. So at the time, we were doing a lot of Russian cases. Mm. There was a lot of Russian stuff coming across. So I started taking those classes online, like at my desk, the Russian-speaking ones. And man, I realized that I did not have an aptitude for it.
Yeah,
it's just not my thing. I tried it, and and then I met some Russian people, and I did a case with a Estonian girl. She's a woman. She's an investigator. She's a beautiful girl.
Yeah.
She taught me some of the words, but man, I could not keep up, and so I just let her handle all that stuff.
Well, I'm a sucker for languages. You know that. So before you arrested me, I was trying to confuse law enforcement by using different languages when I spoke. And I had fallen in love with this beautiful Viennese woman from Vienna, obviously. And, she would speak to me in German. And it made no sense to me, but it sounded really nice. I guess the way she spoke it, or maybe, when you're a kid growing up here, at least here I did, I went to crappy schools. I'm not sure about you, but I went to some crap schools. And I remember watching they used to bring the old TV video cassette combo. You remember that back mm-hmm. in the days, the classroom? And my teacher pulled on a video of Hitler speaking German, man. And it sounded so scary and rough. And in my head, I was like, oh, German must sound like that then, right? So I always thought German was an ugly language until I had this woman from Vienna, and it sounded so beautiful, man. It was such a gorgeous language. I was like, okay, I need to learn a little bit of that.
Have you ever been to Vienna?
Oh, but I'm going soon. Definitely. 2025, I'm passing by.
I went. It was beautiful. It's a beautiful place to go and visit. So
expensive is how I heard.
I did a speech out there, so they flew me out, and actually I brought my whole family out there just to, I was like, if I'm, going to Vienna, we spent 4 days there. It was definitely not enough time to see everything, but it was definitely a cool city to be in.
Oh yeah, yeah. For my German listeners and Vietnamese too. I'll go to Vietnam if you want, but for the Viennese out there, I'm definitely planning on hopefully going there one day. 2025. I think there's some conferences out there, so. Maybe I'll take you with me, Chris, if you're down. Let's see. We'll figure
it
out.
Sounds good. I just want to hear the diss track. So hopefully we get the subscribers. Hopefully we get the questions. Questions at hackerinthefed.com. Send them so we can get this diss track recorded and published.
I'll do it in German. How about that?
Lots of news stories. Lots of stuff going on, Hector. But at Hacker in the Fed, we got to start off with this biggest one. It's called the worst U.S. hack in history.
Oof.
Chinese can monitor all of your calls and emails. Did you read about this thing? Big news this week.
Oh yeah, it's been all over the place. Yeah, it's scary.
So Chinese attackers have infiltrated more than a dozen U.S. telecom providers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and to monitor U.S. officials. The FBI detected this attack about a month ago in a tribute to a state-sponsored Chinese attackers that's been titled by Microsoft. Again, Salt Typhoon. You know I hate these names.
I know.
It also goes by Ghost Empire or Famous Sparrow. Man, I hate these names, Hector.
Yeah, Ghost Emperor, Salt Typhoon. You know, here's the crazy thing, though. You know, it's like they try to come up with these names. I've heard arguments for as to why they have some of these names. Like they're trying to generalize and not make it like, you know, like nationalist or something.
Yeah.
But then it just so happens that all the Chinese actor groups are Panda and Emperor and like, come on, guys, stop screwing around with us. We're not that stupid, seriously. But yeah, the names are ridiculous. And the problem that I also have is that one threat actor group has like 19 different names across different threat intelligence companies. And it's all the same group.
We've done tons of episodes on these stupid-ass names. Hopefully we can come up with some sort of fix to the whole thing. But Hector, the FBI and CISA are all describing this as the worst telecom attack in U.S. history, and they still cannot get the attackers out of the system. So we know about it, the public knows about it, and the attackers are still in the system, able to monitor our calls.
Mm-hmm.
Scary shit, huh?
Yeah, no, it's pretty scary, and it's pretty embarrassing. And this applies to everybody. It applies to me. It applies to you. It applies to people listening on this podcast. Because we all play a part in the security posture of our nations, respectively. You know, you might say, well, heck, this sounds a bit radical. You're generalizing way too much. Me as an accountant, what do I have to do with that? The truth of the matter is that a lot of these systems are old and archaic. That's the reason why a lot of these systems are still infected, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. So they talk about the removing the attackers would require replacing thousands, if not tens of thousands, of out-of-date devices such as switches and routers. And they go on to say it's a massive logistical and financial challenge. I understand the problem of the massive logistical challenge because,
sure,
you know, we're going to have down networks or slower bandwidth, whatever. But the financial challenge, do you know how much we pay for cell phones? And part of that service that we're paying for is security. So I don't give a shit.
Take a look at your bill. When you look at your bill, it's a ton of different taxes for utilities and services and all that. I would think that money that has been accumulated all these years would probably go to services and utilities.
Well, that's going to go, you know, the taxes all go to state or federal collections, government entities. But the overall, these networks, they want to set up these cellular networks and they say, oh, your privacy and your security and all that, but they're running out of date routers and switches.
Yeah.
Screw that. That's not acceptable.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about it like this. During my time when I was a bad guy, I used to hang out on this network called FNET. It's an IRC network. For those of you that don't know what IRC is, internet relay chats, communications medium, very similar to Slack now or Discord now. But back then, you had a bunch of people that had different skill sets. You had guys that were hackers. You had others that were good writers with documentation and so forth. You had really good developers, right? But there was one guy in particular. His name was Neri. He was from Brazil. And I don't know whatever happened to him. I think he got arrested at some point. But what made Neri so powerful in FNET is that he had this massive distributed denial of service power, right? Like, it was ridiculous. He could just take down ISPs. And so after some probing and prodding and reconnaissance, information gathering, social engineering, and everything in between, what did I find out? That a lot of his power came from very old servers that have been sitting on the internet for 10, 15 years, old, antiquated machines that could not be taken offline because they played an integral part of the internet at some company or another. They were mostly running old versions of Solaris Unix. You guys remember that? Solaris SunOS. And to this day, I promise you, if you scan the internet wide and broad, you're going to still find some of those systems online to this day. And because he had access to those systems and they probably had direct connectivity to some sort of data centers and massive pipes. This is why that guy was able to take down a large portion of the internet, because he had so much of that accumulated. The same with these adversaries, these Chinese actors, right? They're breaking into old networking equipment. They're intertwining to a point that they have extreme access, and there's very little you're going to be able to do about it unless you spend a ton of money, which, you know what, Chris, not for nothing, we probably need to do anyway. It's time to upgrade our infrastructure.
So this guy on FNet, like, if you guys back in the day would attack each other and you'd attack other hackers and go after each other and all that,
yeah,
why didn't people just attack his infrastructure?
Because a lot of people didn't know how to attack his infrastructure. Just like with Anonymous, a lot of FNet were not really hackers. You had handfuls of hackers, and I was one of them. This is why when I joined Anonymous, I became like a unicorn, like a rock star, because I was so efficient at what I did. Same with Ryan Ackroyd, Kayla. And because of that, all of a sudden people looking at me like I'm the messiah, like I'm this super hacker. No, I was not a super hacker. I just had enough skills to get us to the next point. So yes, there was a lot of guys like me on FNet. Some of them found his infrastructure. Some of them got it. Some of those guys eventually hacked him and got him arrested. But for the most part, he went like 15 or 10 to 15 years untouched, taking down whoever he wanted at will. It was pretty bizarre.
So it seems like the Chinese attackers managed to intercept real-time phone conversations with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and parts of for the Vice President Harris's staff. And they also accessed a system that was used for U.S. law enforcement agencies for surveillance. It looks like they did all this by using a Windows kernel rootkit. How are we going to get these out of here? How are we going to clean up these networks? How are we going to protect these networks? Is it just all about getting these old boxes off the system?
We need to sit down, and we have generalized it. Let's be real. The people that are in charge of the infrastructure in this country, you know, are probably not unified. They probably need to sit down. These different agencies, inter-agencies, need to sit down and kind of talk about next steps. You're going to have organizations like CISA and the Department of Interior and all these different organizations and agencies have to get together and talk about, all right, we know what the issue is. How do we solve this issue? How much is it going to cost? But with all the bureaucracy and all the melodrama, you know that for a fact. That's going to take even longer. And right now we're going through a transition between presidents. How long is that going to take? We're going to be talking about this for the next 2 years before we see any sort of action.
All right. So the network's not going to change. And that goes into the next article. Big change from the U.S. government. U.S. officials urge Americans to use encrypted apps amid unprecedented cyber attacks. Ooh. So if we're not going to secure the networks, we have to secure the communications. Yeah, we got to do it ourselves. Keep paying the high taxes. Keep paying the high cell phone bill. But security's on you now, bunch of schmucks.
It's so ridiculous. This is why I love cybersecurity, because for the most part, you know, it's apolitical, right? It's agnostic to politics. But these kind of stories scare me, because these kind of stories can inject politics into cybersecurity, which I do not want. As a person that just tries to be neutral, you know me, I'm pretty center-leaning. I would not like that to be a thing.
How do you think politics can come into this?
Oh, man, politics could be, oh, my God, bro, especially now in this political space that we're in, where everything is political. I'm surprised cybersecurity has not been politicized, at least here in the United States. I'm not
like
sure.
It's one party or the other, like, we do cybers better?
Exactly right. I'm scared of that shit, brother. I am. I do not want that, because that's going to screw us all over. And then we're going to be part of that 4-year cycle.
Red and blue cybers? Oh, my God. Too many cybers. Too many cybers.
It's the too many cybers. No, but all jokes aside, right? Listen, I grew up on the internet in the 90s when we had, like, the crypto anarchists, you know, thing going on. Remember that? That whole time frame? There's books written about it. There are guys, they're nerds, right? God bless their souls, those cryptologists who fought the government. They were arrested. They had to deal with consequences. Like, those guys went through hell to keep us, or to be able to not only use encryption, but for Americans here to use encryption freely. There was a point when people wanted to install, like, the Clipper chip on your phones and your laptops, right?
Yeah, the FBI wanted to have a backdoor and all this stuff. Now you got CISA come out and say, this is the quote from CISA, Hector.
Yeah.
Encryption is our friend. whether it's on text messages or if you have the capacity to use encrypted voice communications. Even if the adversary is able to intercept the data, if it's encrypted, it will make it impossible. All right. So they're just saying the networks are screwed. We can't do anything about the networks. We can't kick these Chinese off it. Now it's on you. Well, you got to go peer-to-peer and encrypt everything.
Yeah. Well,
good luck, law enforcement, once that happens. I know of a bunch of FBI listening rooms where we have wiretaps where they're not going to be used anymore.
No. Well, think about it like this, right? So the argument that people always had, especially going back to the 90s during the crypto wars, was that one, if you backdoor encryption, right, the problem is that the adversary is going to end up using that against you, right?
Sure.
Those nerds, those wizards with the gray beards, those guys were absolutely on point, because you fast forward to 2024, about to be 2025, and what is CISA and what is the FBI, what is everybody telling us? These bad actors may have access to these tools that, you know, we want to utilize, or we have been utilizing for surveillance and X, Y, and Z. If we would have had these backdoor chips into all of our devices, these adversaries would be able to use that as well. So I know it poses a ton of challenges in law enforcement. So you, someone that's been in law enforcement for a long time, like, what's your take on this situation, like, as is right now? How does the FBI deal with this problem right now, moving forward?
It sounds like they're passing the buck. It sounds like they're saying, well, we can't do anything about the network, so you guys better do it on your end. And good luck teaching, you know, old mom Tarbell on how to, you know, turn on encrypted communications, or, you know, her and her friends. Not that they're talking about anything sensitive or anything. And the Chinese probably would move quickly past mom Tarbell, but c'est la vie. yeah, but now the FBI's come out and they're saying people looking to further protect their mobile device communications would benefit from considering using a cell phone that automatically receives timely operating system updates. Of course, we've been saying that forever. Yep. Responsibly managed encryption and phishing resistance. So now they're saying that the FBI is saying that you and me, Joe, U.S. citizen, should encrypt all of our stuff on our phones.
Look at that.
I know. This is a 180.
It's a 180. It wasn't that long ago that we heard a different tune, you know?
They got me spinning 720. I'm 180, 180, 180. I don't even know which way to look anymore. Former FBI guy. Now the FBI is telling everybody to encrypt their stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I love when we go through, like, the NSA. Because the NSA do the briefs once a month or whatever.
Yeah.
And I love reading through that stuff, because the stuff that's in there, what did they tell us last month? Last month, they were telling us, hey, by the way, you should reboot your phone once a week. Yeah, you should definitely do that, right? And so as a layman, you're sitting there like, why is the NSA telling me to reboot my phone once a week? Now the FBI is telling us, hey, we should probably encrypt everything. I'm like, hold on a second.
Do you use encrypted communications?
Or
do
Absolutely.
You use different types of encryption, or different types of communications based on the person you're speaking with?
That is such a great question. I'm glad you asked that question. No, and I'm probably doing myself a disservice. So if it's like chats, like private chats, whether it's business or even personal, I use Signal a lot, right?
Yeah.
But what is that doing for me? That's putting me in a little box. Because if there's ever a vulnerability against Signal, the protocol, the app, then I am completely vulnerable for that. You know,
people have gone on Rogan and said, you know, that Signal is vulnerable. I mean, enough time, enough effort.
Well, you know, there's been some issues over the years. The protocol itself is solid. I would recommend any of you guys in here, even if you are not a technologist, but you are a mathematician, go to the Signal repositories in the CADA Hub and start looking at their code and see if you spot anything that's amiss. It is open source for the most part. But yeah, man, it reminds me of that joke. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard of a billion different variations, but, you know, World War One was with whatever weapons, and World War Two, you had nukes and jets and all that stuff. And World War Three, we'll be fighting with sticks and stones, right? At some point, we may even have to revert from technology, you know, depending on how bad things get.
Well, I mean, look at the Sony hack. I mean, they went from emails to pen and paper, and interns running pieces of paper around the halls to pass emails. There's handwritten notes. So, yeah, it's definitely out there in the protocol. But, you know, just some stuff. We've scared the crap out of Hacker and the Fed listeners, you know, just so they can kind of start thinking about it. If you're not deep into the, you know, the crypto anarchist that Hector is, you know, Signal and WhatsApp automatically implement an end-to-end encryption in both calls and messages. So there's an option. And this I didn't know, that Google Fi, that offers end-to-end encryption calls for one-on-one conversations between Android phones that are on Fi by default. So if you and your buddy are both on Fi with Android phones, it's encrypted. And then Google Messages and iMessages can do encrypted calls and text, but you have to set them up. It doesn't come by default.
Yeah, you have to go into your settings and set them up. And the documentation out there is plentiful, ladies and gents. You know, I have several different phones, Chris, you know that, and I have different services. Mm-hmm. And one of those phones and services is Google Fi, just for that exact reason. The automatic updates, security updates, coming from like the Google security team, which, by the way, have some of the brightest minds on the planet. But not only that, you know, the encrypted calls are fantastic. But just like with anything else, I try not to isolate myself in a box. With the exception of Signal right now, I need to find probably like an alternate app as a secondary option. But with something like let's say you have a T-Mobile and then you have something else, AT&T maybe, you get yourself a little Hoopty. They got some cheap Google Fi phones. You could definitely leverage that encrypted calls. It's fantastic.
All right, so everybody, start encrypting your messages and your voice calls. And that leads us into the next one, Hector, that guess what? An encrypted chat service was seized and 2.3 million messages were deciphered by a government agency.
Oh, no. So wait, hold on. Now I'm confused. Is the adversary a Chinese threat actor group or is it law enforcement here?
Hector, that's why I'm doing 720s over here. I don't know what the hell's going on. One law enforcement agency is telling me to encrypt everything. Another one's breaking all the encryption on stuff. So apparently an invite-only encrypted message service known as Matrix was taken out. It was mainly installed on Google Pixel devices, and users reportedly paid thousands of dollars to get 6 months of access to the service. And it let them use the internet anonymously and make encrypted video calls. So it sounds like maybe they set up a bad guy network.
It seems like a repeated history, does it not?
Let me pull that back. Not a bad guy network. It was a privacy network that was being probably utilized by some bad actors, which we've seen on other privacy networks historically. They get perverted by people wanting to do bad things with it. But sure. This whole network was intercepted and taken down on Tuesday, called Operation Passion Flower. Ooh. And it was run by the European authorities, who monitored messages on Matrix for 3 months. Gathered intel and ultimately took down the platform and over 2.3 million messages in 33 different languages from 8,000 accounts were intercepted and read. Result of the takedown, Hector, over a dozen homes were searches across Lithuania, Spain, France, and three people have been arrested. And the case led to seizures of four cars, 970 phones, a house, over $500 million in crypto. Oof. Which is probably higher now based on what we've seen crypto go, and over 150,000 in cash.
Wow.
Look, Hector, at that. Do we encrypt messages or not?
I don't know anymore. I think that, oh, wait, this goes back to war games.
Uh-oh. You love going back to war games. Oh, my goodness. Everything goes back to war games with this guy.
No, war games, let me tell you guys something. War games is like the philosophy of life. It incorporates so many details. What does Whopper say at the end to the players and inside of the DOD, right? It says
game over.
Well, aside from game over, the best way to win the game is not to play. The best way to play the game is not to play or whatever.
I can't imagine if you ran into Matthew Broderick on the streets, I think you would just about fall over.
Maybe I might.
Would you want to go fly like a dinosaur RC plane with him?
I'm totally with it.
On a private island?
No, definitely not.
That's too far. The private island's too far.
No, yeah. Once you get to a private island and things get murky, I'm not really sure I want to be involved in that.
Hector Island? You're not going to start Hector Island?
If I were to start Hector Island, it would just have one occupant, myself.
Oh, all right. Well, that's better than other people's islands, I guess. So no, but all seriousness, Hector, we were talking about this. So what we've learned from put these three stories together.
Yeah.
The U.S. telecommunications is pwned by the Chinese. They're reading whatever they want to read and seeing whatever they want to see. So the U.S. government's responding and saying, hey, use encrypted apps, use encrypted communications. And then we just threw this other story in here because it's an encrypted service that was taken down. This was a whole different, not connected. Yes, use encrypted services if you're worried about your privacy, if you're worried about people listening to your phone calls, you know, find yourself a good encrypted app that you want to use. Sure. These people paid thousands of dollars for access to this encrypted service. And this government agency broke it pretty quickly. Just don't rely completely on whatever app you're using as you think is the most secure thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, going back to the quote that I mangled, the correct quote is, "It's a strange game. The only winning move is not to play." So when the government tells you to use encryption chats and tools and platforms, just make sure you're using their encrypted tools, chats, and platforms.
The backdoored ones.
Yeah, the backdoored ones. That's when you're safe. It's like if you want to quote, I'll go away from war games. I'll quote Lord of the Rings. The closer you are to danger, the furthest you are from harm, right? Why not? Let the government read your emails, see what happens.
I'm going to tell you that article about the government saying use encrypted apps, there is going to be a defense attorney that is going to use that because some prosecutor is going to say, well, obviously this guy must be committing crime. All of his stuff's encrypted. He locked everything. And the smart defense attorney is going to pull that article up and be like, look, the government told him to use encrypted chats and encrypt everything. And of course, he's not going to turn his password over. He doesn't have an obligation to turn his password over.
That is a good point. Man, I've heard slippery so many articles. Oh, yeah. Well, it's slippery for sure, right off the Mount Fuji. I've heard so many arguments when it comes to privacy and encryption. It wasn't that long ago. During the post San Bernardino shooter case. Remember that whole story?
I know that well. I was somewhat touched that case.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a big debate on the news, right? And then we had politicians come on and say, well, hold on a second. The word privacy is not even in the Constitution. So, we're in a weird time. So, folks, by the way, we're not trying to scare you. The reality is that security comes down to you and your, I would say, risk appetite. If you're concerned about your communications, then you probably need to put a little bit more effort into securing those communications. And if you're not in a position to secure those communications, then maybe you need to look at other ways to communicate. Because right now, as is, and this is just the U.S., right? So this is all publicized in the United States. Imagine how it is in Greece or Germany, right? Deutschland or France or Italy or Estonia. We don't know. Right? Because sometimes these stories get buried. They don't really come out. Sometimes governments just don't want to admit that, hey, they're probably compromised. I look, as ridiculous as these stories are, I am happy that the FBI and the NSA and CISA are coming out and saying, hey, this is where we're at. Just giving you guys a heads up. I appreciate that, right? It's not easy to admit when you're in a compromised position. So big shout out to those in power and those in charge that said, I think we need to inform the American public.
Yeah, it sounds like, this case isn't that old. They've only found these the attackers inside the networks in like last month or so. So to come right out and say, oh, wow, we're really pwned. We need to do something. It's good on them on this one. So, Hector, about 15 months ago on Hacker in the Fed, we did a story about a UK logistics firm that went bankrupt. I think they were in business for like 200 years some crazy number like that. And 700 people lost their jobs all because of a ransomware breach. Came in and just bankrupted the company. Well, it's looking like it's happening again. The vodka giant Stoli files for bankruptcy after a ransomware attack. So Stoli Group USA and Kentucky Owl revealed in legal filings that the group is around $78 million in debt. And the contributing factors listed in it was a serious ransomware attack in August of 24, which caused a severe disruption to the firm's IT infrastructure. So, man, we're seeing ransomware attacks now taking out these companies.
Yeah, and we kind of predicted some of this, right? We sat here and we talked about the fact that as a red teamer, I'm looking at networks all day, every day. I've been in some of the networks now as a professional to a lot of name brand companies, Fortune 50s, right? Companies that you would be aware of, or rather the audience, companies that the audience is aware of, they go shopping in some of these places. And some of these organizations have been around for quite some time. Their infrastructure, IT, and so forth have been around since like the 90s, late 90s during the dot-com era. Some of these networks have not been migrated to newer and modern infrastructure. Some of these networks are still using SMB V1 and NTLM V1, or they have SMB. These are protocols used by Windows and so forth. And so they're still kind of catching up. Now, what happens if you break into one of these networks prior to them catching up? We're talking about flat networks, no uses of VLAN, no micro segmentation. They're essentially ripe for the taking. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing organizations getting hit. And when they get hit hard. And because they have not modernized to a point, it's also directly connected or correlated to the fact that maybe they don't have cyber resilience. Now, what is cyber resilience? It's resilience with some cyber in it, which is if we get attacked, if we get compromised, can we get back online? Can we get these systems rolling again? Do we have backups to facilitate that? Do we have the people involved that will make that happen for us? If our data set, it doesn't have to be cyber-related hacks either. I had a great presentation with the CISO, I believe, of New Orleans. I'm not sure if I told you. Yeah, I think it was the CISO of New Orleans, where they had a really bad flood. The data center went offline. And with their partners, they were able to get online within, 72 hours or whatever it was, right? That is the cyber resilience we're talking about. If your organization does not have a plan to get back online within a short period of time, then this happens. Your business goes offline, no more manufacturing, you can't do sales, you can't do invoicing, payments, processing. And guess what? Your losses are exponential, and now you're facing bankruptcy. And it's terrible. Because wherever these businesses are located, headquartered, or based out of, there is going to be an impact on the local economy. Something you and I talked about during that UK logistics company story. 700 jobs, probably based around the same town. Imagine what drastic impact that had on that local economy. The same is going to happen for these Stoli folks. I don't know how many employees they have, unfortunately. But I'm sure it's going to be a terrible plight on a lot of people and a lot of lives.
But you're scaring the shit out of people. And so these ransomware attacks, the alternative is paying. So it seems like in this one, they didn't pay. They said that their substantial problems, their enterprise resource planning system was disabled. Their internal processes, including accounting functions, were forced into manual reentry, and that their systems won't fully be restored until the first quarter of 2025. So to me, that sounds like they didn't pay. Well, they didn't have backups, but they also didn't pay. You and I have talked on this show. We've talked when we do our public speeches that, paying is just making these ransom groups more powerful. These nine-figure payouts are now making these ransomware groups have more buying power in the zero-day market than government agencies. They're outspending. So, you talk about all these bad things and the company goes down. The alternative is paying and getting back online. Potentially. I mean, it's not guaranteed if you pay, you're going to be back online. So what are you prescribing here?
Well, listen, to paraphrase one of our great presidents, President Bush, we do not negotiate with terrorists. All right. The reality is that if you reach a point where you're making X amount of dollars and your security budget is so low that you have no capability whatsoever of recovering from a cyber attack, a ransomware attack, what have you, then unfortunately, you kind of made the bed and now you have to lay in it. This is why I'm very big on accountability. I think accountability should be a big factor here in the United States and abroad to our friends in Europe and Asia and so forth. Because if you have leadership that do not have a resilience policy, they have no idea how to get back online, they probably should not be running or being a leader in that position. So now the question is, Hector, how do we deal with this problem where an organization might get hit tomorrow, they have zero resilience, they have zero backups, they get compromised, what do they do? Well, unfortunately, they're going to have to pay. But keep in mind that once you pay, it's no guarantee you're going to get back online. And it's also not going to be a guarantee. Well, there is a guarantee. The guarantee is they're going to attack you again because they want a second payment or a third payment. They might even give you a nice little discount.
Well, they know you pay.
Yeah. They give you a nice little discount, a little 20% off on the next one.
And you still don't know how they got in some cases.
Yeah, you don't know how they got in.
Sometimes your vulnerability is still wide open.
Oh, yeah.
But Hector, totally unrelated, not related any way to this Russian vodka company being put into bankruptcy through a cyber attack. No. The firm was also hit by retaliation from Putin's regime for its support for the Ukraine following Russia's invasion. Now, the two are not related in any sort of way.
Oh, there's no relation. Oh, okay.
No, whatsoever. Just this random cyber attack that made the company go bankrupt, but also upset the Russians.
Well, this is when I say I get concerned about politics and cybersecurity because you have situations like this pop up.
You mean totally unrelated situations?
Yeah, I mean it seems coincidental, you know. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's a terrible plight on the folks that work there. I'm concerned about the workers. I'm a big worker guy, so naturally, if there's 700 employees or 1,000 employees, and they're going to be affected by this because of the inability. See, this is why I made that Cecil Diss poem, right? That little prose. Because this is exactly what we're talking about. You know, we need leaders to act like leaders. And if they don't know how to lead, that's fine. You have a community out there. You have Hacker in the Fed. Send us an email. Hey, Hack, I'm a CISO of a company. We're making $1 billion a year. I inherited this position. And by the way, I've seen a lot of CISOs that inherited their positions. All right? It's not that they were being imposters. It's not that they shielded them way into that position. It's that sometimes they just fell into it, right? And I'm very sympathetic to that. So ask questions. If you have a concern about, you know, your policies, hey, Hector, yes, I think our CIO built out policies 15 years ago. I'm not sure how it correlates to today. Like, I don't know how it aligns with our security program today. Okay, well, let's validate the policies. What do the policies say? Well, the policy says that if there's a fire in data center 3, that we need to call the fire department, then we need to call the FBI for potential terrorism or something. Then we need to bring our security team to try to do some redundancy stuff and bring our IT guys. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Let's validate it. Let's do a tabletop exercise. Let's talk about it. Ask those questions. Who's in charge? There are things that you can do, even if your budget is tight, that's going to help you. I'm going to give you guys a cheat code. Here's a cheat code. Many organizations, once they're breached, and Chris, you know this for a fact because you came to my apartment and I showed you an attack path. When it comes to Active Directory certificate services, right, it is a minefield for organizations. If you're running your own internal PKI public key infrastructure, you have that on your network, and you're using ADCS or a Microsoft's version of PKI, with the slightest of configurations, you're opening your network to compromise. Well, guess what? You could use a tool like Certify on GitHub that's going to scan your environment, your ADCS servers for potential vulnerable templates. You have tools on GitHub by Trimark, I believe, TrustedSec or Trimark. They created a free tool, Chris, called Lockjaw. And what does Lockjaw do? It scans your ADCS environment. It looks at your templates. It looks at the attributes and permissions. And then it helps you with remediation, actually closing these holes, right? If you go online, ladies and gentlemen, you go to pinkcastle.com. And guess what? It's a free Active Directory auditor tool. It helps you with an assessment report. You execute the tool. It provides you a report. You read through it. And as a CISO, you sit with your team and say, okay, this is what Pinkcastle found. And we paid $0 for this. Thank you to our French overlord for putting this together for us. A great French researcher put this together for free, by the way. And he just sold his business recently. So congratulations to him. He put together the tool. It's freely available. I think Netrix actually bought it recently. Shout out to them for investing in that product and that tool. You take that report, you sit down and say, okay, this issue right here is considered a vulnerability of medium severity. Well, why do we have this in place and how can we remediate that, right? So there's a lot of things that CISOs, even those that inherited the position, could do to deal with their insecurity problem. And the thing is, I'm not sure why, but I'm seeing a lot of organizations are not doing these things. I don't know if it's because of a lack of guidance. I'm not sure if it's a lack of interest in their jobs. But the more we see these stories, the more there's emphasis that there's something missing. And I'm not really sure what that is.
Well, it sounds like they're missing information, Hector. And you gave CISOs the perfect opportunity to reach out and ask questions. Where do they reach out? Questions at hackerinthefed.com. Send them in. Send in tons of questions. More listeners. We got to hear this diss track. We got to get it out there, Hector. I got to get it going on. Excellent show. Again, questions at hackerinthefed.com. We'd love to answer your questions. 5-star reviews, everybody. Share us on social medias. Tell your coworkers, tell your friends, tell your CISO. Listen to Hacker in the Fed. Share us with everybody. Hector, another great show. Put it out there. We'll see what comes back. Get this diss track out in the world, and we'll see what's going on with it.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And I would say the one final thing here for the audience is definitely join our LinkedIn group, because we're going to be utilizing that a lot more. Now that the podcast is, we have full steam ahead. So we have a LinkedIn group for Hacker in the Fed. Chris and I manage it. It's just us. It's just we got a small team. It's just me and him. He and I against the world. So
yeah, website's coming back. LinkedIn, everything. The merch store is coming back. We're getting it all back and going. We just wanted to get the episodes out there and get it to the people. But Hector, had a great time with the show. Love and appreciate you, brother.
Much love, man. Of course. It's a pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers.